Yo, 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 you're listening to the Star-Studded Bi-Coastal August 20th, 2013 edition of the Punk News Podcast. Welcome, 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 you beautiful listeners. Let's get this party started. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. As always, this is the People's Champion Features Editor, John Gentile. With me today is two of my main men. I got men on the I got guys from two continents. That's how sophisticated this podcast is. To my left is my main man, Armando Olivas. Armando, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing a lot better than Daniel Bryan is right now. I can say that much.
Who's Daniel Bryan? I don't know who that is.
He's a professional wrestler in the WWE, and he kind of got did dirty at SummerSlam on Sunday.
Oh, did someone kick him in the wiener?
Nah, not that dirty. Essentially, what happened was he beat John Cena, became the WWE champion, and then the guy who currently had the Money in the Bank contract cashed it in right after the match is over, and then Triple H pedigreed him, knocked him out, and then the guy literally started the match, pinned him, and then walked away a champion in less than 5 seconds.
If you ask me, nobody will ever beat Ric Flair. Ric Flair is the best. And Armando, you were actually at Comic-Con not too long ago, right?
Yeah.
How was that? Was that happening?
It was pretty happening. It was lots of cool people around, tons of awesome cosplayers, cool panels, the celebs. It was great.
And I should mention that Armando was a news editor, and now he's an interviewer as well. He did a pretty kicking interview with the Sidekicks that just ran today, which will be about a week. Oh, here's Paul Penley. Paul Penley, people of Red City Radio, is calling in right now. So let's ring him. Let's ring him on in. So, and meanwhile, I'm also here with Andrew Waterfield. Andrew, how's it going over there in merry old England?
It's fucking cold. I've just stuck a t-shirt on for about the first time I've worn a shirt in the house this week. So we're getting a bit of class up in this joint. Got clothes on.
How's Royal?
I'm not just wearing my pants.
How's Winner. Royal Baby Watch 2013 going?
I assume it's still alive. Well, we haven't been plunged into national mourning, so things are looking good for the Royal Ship Machine.
Well, fantastic. And meanwhile, we are calling Paul Penley from Red City Radio. So, hey,
hello?
Paul, are you there?
I am here.
Paul, welcome to the Punk News Podcast. I'm here with Armando and Andy, and we've got a kicking podcast tonight. Just so the listeners know, we are here with Paul Penley, the three-chord titan, the punk rock people's champion, which we used that before. But here we are with Paul Penley of Celtic Frost. No, I mean Red City Radio. Paul, how you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good. How are you, man?
Good, good. So, Paul, what's happening these days? What do you guys got going on?
You mean me personally at my house? Or
what's chilling? You know, have you mowed the lawn lately, fed the cat, robbed a bank, anything like that?
Well, I feed the cat every day, so that's not really new. I did mow the yard, yeah. I've done exciting things this week.
Cool. Well, first what we're going to do, we've got a little bit of mail to read, and then we'll play a new jam. I think, Paul, you've got a couple exclusive jams for us, right?
Well, I actually don't think either of them are exclusive, but I would like to play them, yes.
Cool. And then after that, I think we're going to do some news. And, Paul, if you want to stick around for the news, feel free. It's always good to have a fresh perspective on the news. So before we get started, we got a couple of letters from some readers. And as always, you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This first email is from Ricky. And as the listeners might know, about 2 weeks ago, we were talking about Minor Threat putting their logo, Minor Threat licensing the Minor Threat imagery for t-shirt sales. And some of the t-shirts wound up in American Apparel. My opinion was that I actually think Minor Threat should put out t-shirts, and that if there's a lot of bootleggers, a band sort of has a moral duty to do so. But what I did say is that, you know, if they're made in sweatshops or whatever, that's kind of not cool, and it's kind of hypocritical considering Discord and Minor Threat and Fugazi are all about, like, based on fairness. So we said to the listeners, if you see this Minor Threat shirt out there in Urban Outfitters or American Apparel, take a peek and let us know where it was made. And Ricky, he scoped one out, and here's what he said. I did manage to find the t-shirt and look at the tag to see where it was made. Ian MacKay should probably reconsider his agreement he made with the t-shirt company, because these shirts are not made in the U.S. They are, in fact, made in Mexico, where I can't imagine wages and working conditions are terribly great. And then he also said, sorry, but after seeing this shirt in person, there is no way in hell I would pay $28 for it. And he actually took some pictures, and he showed us that they are indeed made in Mexico. So I got to say, I cannot back the Mexican-made Minor Threat shirt, not because I'm anti-Mexico, but because I'm anti-sweatshop, and they definitely have sweatshops in Mexico. Armando, would you guys buy one of these shirts, or what?
They definitely have sweatshops in almost all developed countries, though. They used to have sweatshops 16 miles up the road from me.
Andrew, are you in Jersey? I am in...
He's Britain. In Jersey.
I wish I was in Jersey. It wouldn't be 2:45 in the morning if I was in Jersey, mate.
Paul, he's English, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's hard. I'm from Oklahoma, so, you know, accents throw me off.
You were close. Cool. You were close, you know.
You're in the right direction.
I personally would not buy a $28 t-shirt of anything unless it was like gilded with like silver lace, or you know, came with its own watch.
What if it was $8?
I mean, I don't know. I've honestly never owned a Minor Threat t-shirt, so I think I'd probably just stick with.
Yeah, I made a Minor Threat t-shirt years ago, and it looked terrible. Like, you know that you could, like, buy those printer iron-on things? It looks so bad. So anyways, we also got it. We talked about the cassettes last year, and let's see what happens. Oh, here we go. Two podcasts ago, we talked about cassettes, and I said I was pro-cassettes, and everybody else said I was anti, so they were anti-cassettes. We got an email from Todd from Baldy Longhair Records. He runs a cassette label, and here's what he said. You think I'd like Cassette Store Day, but I don't, mainly because no one asked me to be a part of it. But more to the point, I do think these days, like Record Store Day, are leaving a bad taste in some people's mouths as being obvious cash grabs with big markups. I went to the first couple Record Store Days, and after a while, I was like, why am I paying $12 for a 7-inch? And then he goes on to say, now vinyl and CD have flip-flopped, so for me to make tapes that maybe a younger kid just getting into music can buy as cheap is what I'm talking about. Plus, I give in MP3s, so you can get a new cassette and a MP3 together. So, you know, it seems that Todd's argument is that tapes are cheap and that you get MP3s with them, so why not? Real quick, Andy, pro or con cassettes?
Hate them.
Really? Paul, pro or con cassettes?
Man, I don't know if I can do a quick answer, but I'm not a fan.
Long answer. Let's hear it.
Well, I'll give you a quick story about why I don't like cassettes. I went to this house show about a year ago, and there's this band from Chicago playing called Like Bats. I don't know if you guys are familiar with them. Put out this great record last year, and they played this great set, and I never heard them before, and they just blew me away. They were really good, and I'm like, hey, you guys got anything to sell? And all they had were cassettes, and I don't have a cassette player at all. So instead of buying a cassette, you know, I went home and, you know, I bought the record on Bandcamp, and for me, I just can't get behind buying a form of physical media that I can't actually use. I mean, that's why I buy records, because I can listen to records. I can't listen to cassettes. I don't have a cassette player, and if I did, it would probably eat it, you know?
Armando, yeah. Cassettes, pro or con?
I'm pro cassettes, but I can understand why someone would be anti. I'm lucky that I came in, to own a cassette player for no cost at all about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and pretty much, you know, like I tend to, rather than buy like new cassette releases from current bands, I just kind of catch up on like classics, you know, like Iron Maiden and Bob Marley and stuff, where I can find them for like 99 cents or even less at a thrift store. But I feel like this whole resurgence of cassettes in popular, or at the very least like punk culture, to me is kind of annoying, because the average person doesn't have a cassette player, you know, like they don't even, when was the last time they made a cassette player? Like the one I have.
They still make them, son. You can get them on Amazon.com. They make two models.
Other websites are available.
I mean, ultimately, anything that gets people excited about purchasing and listening to music, I think is a good thing. But for me, I'm not a cassettes fan.
I feel like the best route to go is if you're going to make a cassette, don't make your release cassette only. Otherwise, no one's going to hear it.
Yeah, I like definitely. That. I like that.
Like, it just seems like an unnecessary barrier to people getting into your stuff. And I do not like unnecessary barriers.
Well, I like them. I mean, I like CDs and records the best, but I like cassettes because they're cheap. So I'll definitely check out a band if they got a $5 cassette. Thanks for the email, Todd. But speaking of music that gets people excited, Paul, I hear you got a jam for us. Let us hear this wonderful, sweet, succulent tune that you have.
It's succulent? Like a lobster claw?
I would say more like a, you know, like a spit pig, you know, with the apple in the mouth.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I provided you with two songs. I don't know which one you're talking about.
Well, I was going to let you pick, but
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I'll put my own self-promotion on the back burner.
This is punk rock. You know, we're all about freedom of choice, like Devo says, you know.
Right.
Like Wendy says.
Okay.
You have now equivalated Wendy's to be the punk rock Devo of fast food.
I kind of think Wendy's is kind of punk rock because they saw there's McDonald's and BK and they're like, we're going to take on the Giants, independent style.
Hey, I'm not going to lie. When we're on tour, we eat so much Wendy's because of the freaking dollar menu. It's disgusting. It's not good for you. But
you mean it's literally disgusting or it's wonderful, but you say it's disgusting?
Because yeah, I say disgusting in that the sheer volume is grotesque.
Yeah,
but the food's actually not bad.
I know. Out of dollar menu, Wendy's dollar menu is the healthiest because of options like salad, baked potato, and chili.
Right.
I'm just saying.
Paul, what's good fast food strategies when you're out on the road? What's good food strategies when you're out on the road on those long hauls?
The best food strategy is to play somewhere that provides wholesome, fresh ingredients. So that you don't get sick to your stomach after repeatedly putting crap into it. Other than that, I got nothing, man. Wendy's, it's the way to go.
Well, Paul, give us your dollar menu song that you have for us.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, I want to play the song by a band called The Boot Heel. They're from Springfield, Missouri. It's kind of got this like kind of little punk rock, little roots rock, maybe a little alt country feel to it. They put out a record this year in January, and to this day, it's still probably my favorite record I've heard all year, and it's really good. And I just, you know, I figured since I've got this platform to make the dozens of listeners hear something that I like.
Dozeners? We've got listeners in 182 countries. We've okay, got a listener in the Vatican City. Might be the Pope. The Pope might be listening to this jam, Paul.
Well, in that case, that means there's 182 listeners out there who are going to hear the Boot Heel. But anyways, the song's called Kicking Dust, and yeah, it's a good jam. We'll be right back.
are back. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast, and we're sitting here with Paul from Red City Radio. Now, Paul, I understand that Red City Radio actually formed from the wreckage of, like, two other bands.
That's sort of true, I guess. Maybe. Well, not really.
How'd you guys form?
I don't really have an answer because I've never been asked that question before. That's a new one.
Wait, well, in that case, you should, like, make something up and, like, say, like, Zeus, you know, like, turned into a golden swan and had sex with a bull, and the band was born from that bull, bequeathed from that bull.
Sounds very similar to some sort of demigod story, but now the quick version is, like, all of us had been in local bands, and I had this neighbor that moved next door, and we started playing songs, and so he and I started the band, and we found Dallas the drummer, and found out he could sing because he used to front his own band, and then this whole idea of, like, you know, really getting, like, four vocalists into a band with, like, a similar kind of aesthetic goal would be really cool, and then it just kind of grew from there.
Well, fair enough. Now, you guys got a new record coming out pretty soon. Is it coming out in September?
It comes out October 15th.
October 15th. So tell us about the new record. I know the last record was a really popular record. Do you feel any pressure on the new record? Are you going to say, oh, man, everybody's going to judge us compared to the first record? Are you guys not worried about that at all? What's it like in the Red City Radio camp? Are you guys sweating it up?
No, man. I mean, we definitely felt some pressure when we were, you know, putting it all together and recording it. But that was entirely generated by ourselves. Like, we had a number of, like, goals that we wanted to achieve when we were writing and recording the record, like, just from, like, a craft standpoint and an aesthetic standpoint, just how we wanted to approach everything. And, you know, we did everything a little different in the studio. Like, we recorded with a different person. We wrote part of it in the studio. We had just come back from tour, so we actually rehearsed in the studio for a few weeks before we actually started tracking. We had a different guy do art. We had a different guy do layout. Just everything was a little different. So on one hand, we felt, and we still feel, that this is definitely the best thing we've ever done. We're all very, very proud of it and excited for people to hear the thing in its entirety. But at the same time, you know, you just never know until you get, like, that third person objective, you know, experience. But everyone that we played it for has liked it as much as we do. So,
actually, you know, let's be meta for a second or two. You know, often in punk rock, in indie especially, but punk rock too, bands will shoot up real quick, and then, you know, their fan base, or at least the exterior of their fan base, will turn on them when they deviate from their, I guess, first template. Are you worried about the blowback or the fans turning on you guys?
Nah.
No. Are you the kind of band that play what you want to play and you don't care what the fans want at all? Like, say, I don't know, the Melvins?
Oh, man. No, the Melvins can do whatever the fuck they want. No, I mean, from day one, we've always just played the music we wanted to play regardless. So that's never even factored into the equation at all.
Now, the new song is called Show Me on the Doll, Where the Music Touched You, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. So tell me, why molestation joke on the debut single?
Do you call it a molestation joke?
I do.
Kind of come off as such, to tell you the truth.
Okay. Wow. I think that speaks more to where you guys are coming from.
Well, tell me where you were coming from on the track.
I don't like to really explain either song titles or lyrics too much, because I figure, and I believe that, like, everyone has their own subjective experience for those things. But I will say that every song title isn't just thrown together and tacked on to try and be clever or whatever. There actually is a feeling and a reason behind it. But now that I'm filled with a slight sense of shame, thanks to you guys, myself.
Let's be real. I like your band, and I like that song. But, I mean, you really didn't realize that was, like, a molestation joke?
I mean, it's not a joke about molestation.
But, I mean, it's like a reference to molestation.
No, it's a reference. Well, I mean, it's a reference to a cliched, you know,
it's a play on words.
Diagnostic technique that, you know, I have seen parodied thousands of times on various sitcoms and comedy albums. So I don't feel like we're breaking new ground with our edgy comedy here, John. So
edgy. He uses the word edgy, you guys. He's trying to, justify it.
I also use the word gritty. Take from that what you will.
Well, fair enough. Now, Paul, you're married, right?
I am, happily.
And you guys tour a fair amount, right?
Yeah, 3 to 4 months of the year, usually.
Is that kind of difficult, like being married and being out for a while, or how does that, or is your wife happy to get you out of the house?
See, this is where I make the, oh no, it's fucking great joke. But no, it's you know, my wife supports me and everything I do, and when we got married, like, this was already something she knew I wanted to pursue. It's been a dream of mine since I was 12 years old and first heard Screeching Weasel that I wanted to be in a punk rock band and I wanted to tour. So,
well, let's talk about that a little bit. Tell me about how'd you get a hold of Screeching Weasel at 12 to begin with? Because honestly, I didn't get involved in punk till I was like 18 or 19.
Well, so my sister was going to the University of Chicago and she used to do a college radio station there. And she would send me tapes of her shows. And at the time, like, I just wanted to listen to, like, Metallica and, you know, like, Iron Maiden or shit like that. But the tapes she would send me, I wouldn't be really interested in until much later. Thankfully, I kept them all. But she sent me a tape. She did, like, a Screeching Weasel dedication show, right? Because she was in Chicago and whatnot. And so she sent me... On one side was, like, all the songs that she played. And then on the other side, which wasn't her show, she went ahead and put Booga to Booga to Booga. And so I listened to that first. And the first time I listened to it, I just thought it was crap, you know? Just this is terrible. But there was one particular song on there called My Right, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. And for whatever reason, it just caught my ear. And I don't know. From there, I was just kind of hooked.
Tell me, was it like when you first heard Screeching Weasel? Like, it took you a while to get into it, or what exactly?
Well, he said he hated it at first.
Yeah, I mean, it was just so far off the beaten path of what I was, you know, really into. But just something about that song, I couldn't tell you why, you know? It's not like there's some dynamo playing this, like, shredding lead, or, like, the instrumentation will just blow your mind, and... You know, the lyrics are pretty straightforward, and I don't know, man. There was just something there, some sort of ethereal, like, animalistic fucking feeling it gave me. And, you know, that's kind of been chasing that ever since, I guess. It's much like your first bump of cocaine, John. It's never as good as the first time.
Well, you know, I'm glad you bring that up, too, because I spoke to Black Day a while ago, and he's like, yeah, I've done cocaine, but I don't do it anymore. And he says the reason he could do it is because he had self-moderation. Paul, let's talk about drugs on the road. How wild and crazy do you guys get? You know, because like Black Diet, of the Dwarves, of course. That guy got pretty wild back in the early 90s, not so much anymore. And I spoke to King Kong of the Shrines this morning, and he got pretty wild out on the road. I spoke to Dwed Hellion of Integrity last week, and that guy got – and they're all pretty open about it. So – Paul, tell me, how wild do you guys get on the road? How freaky does it get?
Well, first of all, you've set me up for failure by virtue of the three people that you're asking me to compare ourselves to.
Oh, I'm not asking you to compare yourself to anybody. I'm just – see, this is an old interviewer trick, you see, and I'm not actually being on the level with you, Paul. I'm setting up examples to make you feel more comfortable because if I say, Black Dahlia, you know, he's had – sex with a lot of girls, then you could say, oh, yeah, so have I. Don't tell my wife. And then, you know, tomorrow on TMZ, it says Paul Penley of Red City Radio, cheats on wife, you know. And then
yeah, I hope you'll probably open with that story, too.
Yeah, I think so.
Take that, royal baby.
So tell me, how wild is – or – but I also give you the option of doing the opposite because a lot of times in punk rock, and I understand this, like if I say, you know, punk rocker Jones – you know, a lot of people like this negative music, and the punk rocker Jones is like, I'm all about the positivity, man. That's how I'm different than everybody else. So I'm giving you two roads, Paul. You can either say that you're a wild dude, or you can say, you know, I'm not a wild dude. I'm all about the music, and that's all that matters to me.
You know what? I'll just give you the truth. And the truth is, when it comes to drug use, we don't really do too much. We smoke some weed. That's about it. Lots of beer and lots of whiskey. I take that back. And on occasion, like, we do have a stash of, like, muscle relaxers or something when we have to do a long drive and you need to get some sleep or whatever. So you'll like take half of one of those just so you can crash out in the back of the van. But that's not really recreational. That's more of a survival technique.
Well, actually, that's a good point. What are some good survival techniques out on the road? Because like you guys use a van, like an Econoline van or something?
Yeah, we're actually in between vehicles right now. A lot of people don't know this, but Hostage Comms doing this Kickstarter. All that money is actually going to us. That's not for them. for our van.
Are you serious or is that a joke?
Yeah, it's a joke.
Oh, okay. You know, for the Melvins had their old – well, they didn't put it on, but about in the mid-80s on eBay, there was the Melvins van from the mid-80s. You could buy that, you know.
Yeah, well, I guess that ship sailed. It's probably gone.
Kurt Cobain drove it, so you could drive the van that Kurt Cobain used to drive.
I could. I'm sure it's low miles.
So there's four guys in your band. So mm-hmm. you have one guy in the driver's seat and then like three guys chilled out in the back, or how's that work?
We usually take a fifth guy with us to do merch and drive and kind of make sure we don't get too stupid. Anyways, yeah, we just take turns. We have a shift. We have a rotation. As far as survival techniques, man, the biggest thing is to just stay hydrated. Just drink lots of water, drink lots of Gatorade.
Just like Jarhead.
What do you guys do to amuse yourself on the road? Do you have games that you play or what?
Just good company, my man.
You guys just shoot the shit on long rides, huh?
Yeah, man. We listen to a lot of music. We listen to like comedy records. Watch like hook up the laptop. People in the back watch some fucking TV shows or whatever. Fair it's enough. Not rocket science, man. It's just road trip.
Do you guys get harassed by the cops ever?
No, and I'm gonna go ahead and knock on the side of my house. But we have never once been pulled over by. I take that back. We've been pulled over once, but we've never once been given a ticket or gotten in trouble with the police.
When you got pulled over, did you tell the policeman that you were in a band?
No, I think he could figure that out by the van, the trailer, the loud music, and all the stickers.
And so what did he say? Why did he say he was pulling you over?
Well, actually, when we were leaving the venue, we noticed one of our headlights had gone out, like, right then and there. And we were like, oh, crap. But we were only going, like, 3 miles down the road. And he pulled us over and walked up, and he was like, hey, you know, your headlight's out. And we're like, yes, we know. That's why this guy is in front of us, you know, following us. We're getting it fixed in the morning. He was like, okay, cool. See you later. That is our traumatic, you know, Red City Radio getting pulled over by the cop story.
It's not exactly like the Henry Rollins, like, getting beat up and thrown against a wall cop stories.
No, man. We're sweethearts. They love us.
Actually, what's a good way to talk to the police? Do you, like, put your hands on the wheels and say, yes, officer, anything you want, officer? Or how would it go down? Or are you like, fuck you, man?
Well, I mean, is that an interview or a trick too? Because you said the best way. I mean, the best way to go to jail or the best way to get out of
something? I mean, John's pretty much just trying to get you to say something incriminating.
Yeah, I've lucked out many times in my life in my encounters with police officers, and my best advice is just be as brutally honest as you can and make your lies really believable.
Fair enough. Now let's get back to the new record, because that's why we're here today, to talk about the brand new Red City Radio record. I know the punk news kids are really excited. They love the new single. It's out on Paper and Plastic again, which is your second album out on Paper and Plastic, correct?
That is correct.
So I guess what about Paper and Plastic appeals to you? Is it the size of the label, the people that work there, or is that you just want to maintain the same fan base?
I don't think the label has anything to do with maintaining the fan base. Mm. Basically, we've just been treated really well. We have a good relationship with Vinny. Thomas, who works for the label, loves the band, and he has gone above and beyond to help promote it and make it as successful as it can possibly be. And I mean, it's nothing fancy about it. We just have a really good relationship. We love the label, and they take good care of us.
Now, there's actually an interesting story. I think you cut your very first demo, and you gave it to Vinny, right?
No. You can go ahead with the question if you want.
Oh, well, the question was, I know you guys were, when you cut your first demo or maybe the first version of your first album, and you're really excited and you gave it to Vinny, and he said that he liked it, but he didn't love it, so it caused you guys to reconsider a lot of your songs.
Oh, that, yeah. No, that was, so, yeah, when we were doing Dangers, we did pre-production for about half of it, and we were pretty excited about how it turned out, and we gave it to him. We were like, hey, this is where we're going with it. And basically, he didn't say he didn't like it. He was just like, man, it's good, but I think you can do better. And all of us were like, what? You know, like we felt we'd really knocked it out of the park. And so we kind of went into this mental tailspin for a week. We're like, well, why couldn't he possibly like it? We're like, well, can you give us notes? And he was like, no, I don't want to give you notes. I want you to make the record you want to make. I'm just giving you my honest opinion of what you have now.
Not enough.
Not enough rock kicks, I think, because you can hear that.
Not enough references to leaving town.
Right, right. So after he did that, like, we sat down, like, all four of us, and really just started reworking some. And the funny thing is, like, we sent him six songs, and we only changed three of them. So the story's not quite as interesting as I guess it could be, but the other three were like, oh, no, fuck him. Those are staying the same.
That does sound like it's not the best kind of criticism, because obviously he wasn't specific with it, but it's that criticism that comes with a sort of an intrinsic faith that you're putting it out there so that the person that you're offering it to knows that you have faith in them to do better.
Right. No. And it was totally a mind trick. Like, it was almost like a second half speech in an American football game. where you inspire them to do better by saying that they haven't done bad, but they can just, you know, give that
110%. Yeah, we don't do inspirational speeches in football/soccer. It's right. Mostly four-letter words. And
yeah, seriously, Andrew, you don't even
thrown to the head.
You don't even say the word soccer. It just offends me. Like, I hear your accent. You say football. I know what you're talking about. And it should go.
Yeah, I despise that word.
Yeah, soccer's a pretty disgusting word when you really think about it.
To me, it's just
short for association.
It's when people say world football to me. It's like, no, man, I know what you're talking about. You're German. When you say football, I know what you mean. You don't have to say world football.
Fußball.
Der Fußball ist sehr gut, ja?
Ich habe eine lange Trauserschlange.
Paul, the new album, was it like a lightning in the bottle, or did you guys really work a long time on this album to make it exactly like you wanted, or was it like a spark?
Oh, no. Like, some of it was, but yeah, we worked it pretty hard. We actually stayed in the studio longer than we had anticipated, just because we didn't have it quite where we wanted it. And we ended up reworking or re-recording a couple things a couple times. Luckily, we record with this guy who's he's a friend of JoJo. Well, he's a friend of all of us, but we met him through JoJo, and he gave us a really good deal on the use of his studio, and he's an excellent, excellent engineer. He kind of gave us that leeway to make sure that we walked out of there, all of us, including him, knowing that we did good work, you know?
What's something on the record that's really going to surprise people? What's something that people are going to be caught off guard about or not expect from Red City Radio?
Oh, see, that's... I wish I could answer that, but I don't want to give too much away.
Just make up something. Like, just make up lies.
That's what you should do. Yeah, you should say there's, like, a lot of heavy metal breakdowns.
Then people are going to be... The 182 people that hear this are going to be like, man, they said heavy metal breakdowns, and that shit didn't happen.
Now... You seem like you're pretty interested in keeping the record secret. Is that how it's going down?
What do you mean, keep it secret?
Well, you don't want to talk about it. You don't want to talk about the meanings. I mean, are you worried about leakage, or you just want it to hit people all at once when they get it on the day of release?
Yeah, man. I just want people to hear it with open ears. Wait, is that a phrase?
High-level Scientologists heard it last year.
What?
High-level Scientologists heard it last year. Yeah, that's how secret it is.
Well, then I think we need to become high-level Scientologists.
I am a high-level Scientologist.
Since when?
I've read a lot of really bad science fiction, like, so I'd probably be, like, straight to the top of the pile.
Like, I've been studying a whole lot. I can, like, read minds and stuff these days. It's pretty sweet. You guys should join.
That'd be some next-level John Travolta shit.
You have to give me $50 each first, though.
I'm happier with the $50, to be honest.
That's what you think, but you're not.
Are you telling me that because you're reading my mind and you just know this?
In your bloodstream, you are haunted by the ghosts of dead aliens.
All right, so speaking of stuff getting crazy, we're wrapping up this interview. Paul, you know, you guys are a sort of Well, you guys are a well-known band, but you're also sort of the footnote in another well-known band. That is, it was your gear that was part of the notorious Atari's drum throwdown, wasn't it?
It was just our snare drum.
So just so the listeners know, a little while ago, there was a bit of a freak out with the Ataris where the main Atari guy picked up the drums and threw
the main
out.
Atari guy? His name is Chris Lowe.
Listen, man, I got
to listen to the Atari guy.
I got to listen to Off. I got to listen to Flag. I got to listen to the Melvins. I don't have time to be listening to Fat Music Volume 3. You know what I'm saying?
I feel like you're missing out.
But the reason why you can't say main Atari guy is because they might think you're thinking of the console.
The actual game console.
Yeah, like, oh, the former CEO of Atari, he threw his drum kit at somebody. that's a misleading headline.
That guy freaked out and threw his drums at the drummer. So apparently Red City Radio's snare drum was sort of involved in that scuffle.
Yeah, this is the most peripheral of, other than the fact that we were touring with him, yes, it's the best way to connect us to the incident, yeah.
How's the snare drum these days? Is it still traumatized? Is it doing okay?
No, it's good, man. You know, it's I just saw him last week. He's still loud and proud.
Time heals all wounds, as they say. Paul, is there anything else you want to talk about the new album or talk about in general or Wendy's or anything like that?
Yeah. Hey, I actually had a question for you, John.
Yeah.
So I understand that you pronounce your last name Gentile.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Okay. So, when your parents came to this country, were they ashamed of their Christian heritage, and they changed the pronunciation, kind of like, you know?
No, I'll tell you what it is when
like when Jewish people come over and they change Greenberg to Green to be more American. Did you like come over and you're like, you know what? I don't know if people are going to be into this whole Jesus as Savior thing, so let's call it Gentile.
Well, Gentile would mean that you are into Jesus as Savior, but all Gentile means is you're not part of a religious class of the other religious class. So Gentile can technically refer to Jews, it can refer to Muslims or Buddhists or whatever. It can even, like, if you're a lawyer, you could say non-lawyers are Gentiles. But what happens is, it's not that they were ashamed of their heritage. It's that when my grandfather came over from Italy to actually escape the communists in, like, 1910, he couldn't spell. So when they came in, they asked him what his name was. He said, it's Gentilucci. That's Gentilucci, but he couldn't spell it. So we just spelled it Gentile, and it became Gentile.
That just wasn't as funny as I thought it was going to turn out to be. But good story. I like it. Cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
That's like a very like a 1990s movie like esque thing to happen.
You mean like a drama or something like that?
Yeah.
More like a dramedy. It's, you know, or tragedramedy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a specific moment in like your family history that's now locked in. And like that story's going to be there for generations now, which is pretty cool.
I feel like you should pitch the John Gentile story to like Lifetime or AMC or some low budget cable network. You could have a hit sensation on your hands.
I feel like he should wait until he retires and becomes this very humble janitor that guides inner city schools to like academic excellence, and then they can call it Gentle Gentile.
Actually, you're on that. What happens is I'm hiding from a mob boss, and so I'm going to become a nun, and I'm going to teach the inner city youth, you know, the joys of non-crime through singing and stuff while I'm on the run from the mob as a nun.
Gentle and then act. later on, you'll become a crime-fighting vigilante, born-again Christian.
I don't know what movie that is.
I don't know. It has all the makings of a trilogy, though.
Yeah, it was a reference to Kick-Ass 2, which actually just came out this weekend.
Honestly, I didn't like Kick-Ass 1 because it was too violent for me, man. I couldn't handle it.
I loved it because it was violent.
Like Mark Millar.
Wow, that's crazy because I thought Kick-Ass 1 was freaking awesome. Such a good movie.
Well, speaking of things that are freaking awesome, Paul, you got another jam for us, don't you?
Yes, I do. Yeah, this one's actually – I actually sing on this one, so that's something.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so it's called, as you said, Show Me on the Doll Where the Music Touched You. And it's from our forthcoming record called Titles.
Actually, before we play it, so what's the whole deal with you guys claiming to be a juggernaut?
I'm the juggernaut, bitch!
What do you mean, Mondo?
Well, because the song says, like, I'm a fucking juggernaut. And I know you're not literally being a juggernaut, but because every time I listen to it, though, I feel like you guys sound very tough, and I'm like, you guys aren't really that big. Although I think collectively,
dude, I've been working out since I've seen you. It's been 3 years, man. I'm big.
It hasn't been 3 years. It's been like a year and a half.
Yeah, but that time doesn't count.
I've been working out too. I'm probably not as big.
Anyone can be the Juggernaut if
you have the ruby of Sitorak.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, Mondo, to answer your question, it's about a frame of mind. It's about having, you know, confidence in yourself to go ahead and just fucking go for it.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right, well,
let's
go ahead. Oh, no, Mondo.
Well, you say, well, that's all I needed to know. I like that explanation. Right. There you go.
Well, all right, well, let's slam it on down with this track from Bread City Radio. Oh, and quick, Paul, real quick. When's the new album coming out again?
It comes out October 15th. On paper and plastic.
Vinyl and CD?
The CD, good question. The CD is actually going to be available through Black Numbers, and both of those are available for pre-order through both their websites.
Kick ass. And we will be right back after this sweet, succulent tune from Red City Radio.
Succulent.
I can't believe I let something so petty change the way I can't believe I let them get to me. Knots inside my back, and I would walk around with my head down, like I was the one who's doing something wrong. And I've heard smarter men than me say it gets dark before the dawn, and I can't wait until the morning to admit that something's wrong. And I it's all coming down. It's coming undone. Fired up, choking on all of these words, the songs I left unsung. So I'll take a deep breath of fresh air and exhale the fire from my lungs. When I take my next breath, I will be renewed. When you find yourself in a hole, stop digging.
On the Punk News Podcast, and I'm here with Andy, news editor. Andy, how you doing still?
I'm all right. I'm awake, which is weird for this hour of the morning, but I was sensible this week. I didn't just stay up till 4 o'clock in the morning like a crazy person. I went to bed at 10, had a nice little 3 hour nap, and now I'm raring to go.
Thanks for your sleep schedule. I appreciate that. And we're here with Paul from Red City Radio. Paul, I'm excited to talk about the news today. We got a lot to talk about.
Let's do it.
And actually, Armando had to run because, as it turns out, Armando is actually indebted to a mobster. So he had to get into some kind of program where now he's a nun singing to inner city youth. I think Lauryn Hill's a part of it. I don't know. Anyway, let's just hope, you know, Armando gets out of this whole situation. Okay. And so the first thing on our news today, a lot of kids are interested in this. Some people are pro, some people are con. As a lot of people know, the Replacements are, quote, reuniting for at least two, maybe three Riot Fest shows. The two, there's really only two actual replacements in the band. That's Paul Westerberg and Tommy Stinson. Joining him is longtime studio drummer Josh Fries, who played on the Dwarves' last album, and David Minhan. So my question is to you guys, is this still the Replacements? Does it even matter? I mean, is it cool just to see Paul Westerberg and Tommy Stinson playing together, or is this a scam? Are people not getting what they were hoping to get?
Well, if we look at, say, I mean, the ideal Replacements lineup in an ideal world would be, you know, Paul, Tommy, Bob Stinson, and Chris Mars. But given that Chris Mars doesn't really drum anymore, and
he hates them all,
and the Bob Stinson has been dead.
I think he just hates Paul.
Yeah. And like Bob Stinson's been dead for 18 years. I think this is a pretty solid lineup. I mean, like, Freeze has got form as well. Like, Freeze played on the new tracks for the Best Of compilation a couple of years ago. So, you know, there's the pre-breakup Replacements members, there's only Steve Foley left that's not represented or that isn't just not involved because he either doesn't drum or hates Paul. So,
I mean, to me, it's the Replacements just because Paul Westerberg and Tommy Stinson are there. I mean, if you're going to split hairs, you might as well say the Vandals aren't the Vandals because they don't have the original singer, the original drummer, the original guitar player. What, they got one original member from their first incarnation.
Napalm Death has no original members.
You're right, and it's still Napalm Death, and no one's freaking out, you know, paying a $20 ticket to go see Napalm Death.
Yeah, Alkaline Trio's had like one original member since 1997, in fact.
Oh, stellar point, Andrew.
You know,
thank you very much.
This is true.
The Dwarves too. I mean, shit.
Well, no, I mean, the Dwarves have always had a revolving lineup, but the Dwarves still have Black Dahlia, He Who Cannot Be Named, Saltpeter. And, Rex Everything since, like, 1992. So, but, I mean, I feel you. So, but I actually think it's a little different because a lot of those bands are collectives, I guess, especially Napalm and the Dwarves. But the Replacements, I mean, a lot of people view, like, the classic lineup as the classic lineup. I mean, I don't know if these
shows... I mean, one of them's dead, though, you know? So that right there, that's just... If you're going to see can you no longer play as the Replacements because one of them's dead? I mean...
Oh no, I'm not saying it's not the quote Replacements. I mean honestly, there's no point in being jaded. If people want to see this band and play those songs, and the band wants to play them, I say go for it. You know, I'm always for playing jams live. You know.
Yeah, sorry, carry on, mate.
Oh, I was just gonna say, you know, personally, if I could afford and had the time to go to Riot Fest, I would totally go just to see the Replacements.
Paul, are you a Replacements maniac?
No, man, some people are. I'm kind of in the middle ground. Like, to me, they're one of the best, worst bands ever. Like they've got so much golden material and so much crap at the same time. Like, I've often said that the Replacements are the easiest band to make a compilation for someone. You know what I mean? Because, like, the hits are so self-evident that you don't have to wade through any deep cuts to find, like, you know, something extra put on there. Like, it's just, like... I mean, everyone loves Tim, but come on. No one fucking likes Gary's Got a Boner. That song blows. It's just terrible.
Especially because my dad's name's Gary, so it just fucking freaks me out like nothing on earth.
Yeah, every but to be fair, if Gary didn't have a boner, you wouldn't be here right now. So, I mean, let's not talk too ill about
it. I don't think about it.
But you know what I'm saying? Jesus. Like they're just, just all of their albums, they've got these moments of brilliance and then moments where you're just like, what the fuck, you know? So I won't say I'm a maniac because I don't like every Replacements song or even every album.
A step above, like, the majority of their output. But, yeah, like you say, there is some weak stuff on there. Like, I'm a big Replacements fan. And I'm usually a bit loath to get behind, like, reunions and stuff. But I would love to see Paul and Tommy playing these songs live.
Too.
It's just a bit of a pain in the ass because they never got to. I mean, They had success to a certain point in the US, but they were never a quote-unquote big band, but they were never a medium-sized band in the UK, so the chances of them touring over here are pretty slim. So,
and they've got such a not to stretch this out way too much, because I don't want to sit on my front porch all night, and I'm sure Andrew wants to go to bed, but like I can't think of another band that has so much rich mythology around them, like The Replacements. It's just... They're just a very iconic, special band. So I can understand why people would be upset, you know. Especially, I mean, and Josh Fries is such a polarizing addition to any band that needs a drummer anyway. So I'll just leave it at that.
I think the interesting thing about this now is that while they sort of drifted for a while in the sort of musical consciousness, you've just got to look at the bands that we report on a regular basis on Punk News and have done for the last few years. There's so much Replacements influence there. They are one of those bands that, even though they weren't huge, like, I'm loath to compare them to sort of Black Flag or the Bad Brains or anything, because they started whole genres, but there's definitely a sense that so many bands, most notably sort of the Lawrence Arms or Jawbreaker or Alkaline Trio or Gaslight Anthem, an awful lot of their sort of sound and temperament to the Replacements.
Well, speaking of influential musicians, Michelle Obama's putting out a hip hop album.
Oh man.
And it's got a lot of notable hip hoppers on it, MCs. It's got the hits Hip Hop Feet with DMC and Artie Green. It's got You Are What You Eat, Salad Bar with Modest Yahoo and Travis Barker. And it's got Let's Move with, you know, the very first or the greatest beatboxer, Dougie Fresh, and also Artie Green and Chauncey Hawkins. Is this a waste of money? Like, is this going to make any kid at all, like, be healthier? Like, oh, Run DMC says I should eat my broccoli, so I will. I actually said that it won't affect any kids at all. But a lot of the Punk News commenters said that they teach kids and that this kind of thing is actually effective. I'm wondering if you guys have an opinion on this.
I could not give an educated opinion on this one way or the other as to whether or not children will actually react positively to it. I will say that I would rather mainline Cheese Whiz into my fucking dick vein than listen to it.
It's, to me, it's a slightly better approach than the sort of Jamie Oliver ban kids from eating anything that's bad for them bollocks. But it also reminds me of that sort of Nancy Reagan Just Say No bullshit. And like, when Nancy Reagan was doing all that Just Say No stuff, there was a TV show in the UK called Grange Hill. It was like really popular, like, kids drama show set in a high school. And one of the main characters gets addicted to heroin and dies. And like, and this was like, it was like a big thing, because, like, you know, like, heroin addiction isn't generally portrayed in kids' TV. Nancy Reagan gets wind of it.
This is a kids' show?
Yeah. Nancy Reagan gets wind of it.
They grow up fast over there, John.
Invites all the cast members who are involved in that storyline over to do this, like, press thing and Just Say No and all this bollocks. And they put a single out in the UK. And every time they discuss it on, like, TV retrospectives now, they talk about how they were all stoned when they were at the White House. Awesome.
Well, you got to take the opportunity when it presents itself.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like,
you know, smoking actually,
weed on the White House lawn.
So if I had a child, which I don't, but let's pretend that my dog needed guidance from music.
Yeah.
I would actually play They Might Be Giants children's album, No, before I play any healthy food centric hip hop album, because that album is fucking brilliant. If you guys haven't listened to it, you should just end the podcast right now and go listen to it.
I noticed that track 11 is called Pass the Rock. I hope that's not about smoking rocks.
Well, it's They Might Be Giants, so you know it is.
No, I mean the track 11 of the Michelle Obama album.
Oh, so well, then no.
Pass the Rock. And speaking of Pass the Rock,
I did wonder about that one.
we'll find out. Andy, are you going to buy the album when it comes out?
I really am not. I think Michelle Obama's probably got better things to do with her time, like maybe talking to her husband about how drone strikes over Pakistan are a bit fucked up. But, you know, what's extra judicial killings compared to a few fat kids?
Paul, how about you? Are you going to get these Dougie Fresh singing about veggies jams?
No.
Fair enough. Speaking of other contentious things, as we've spoken about this a little bit on the podcast before, a lot on the podcast before, so we're not going to do overkill, but as I'm sure the Punk News podcast listeners know, Flag, which is Keith Morris, Chuck Dukowski, Dez Kadena, Bill Stevenson, and Steven Egerton doing Black Flag songs, was recently sued by Black Flag and SST Records' Greg Ginn, as well as Henry Rollins was sued too for trademark infringement. Basically, they said that Flag is infringing on Black Flag's trademark by touring, and also that Keith Morris and Henry Rollins fraudulently filed for a Black Flag trademark. Keith Morris finally responded. Here's what Keith Morris said. "We've done nothing wrong. Every step of the way, we've all talked to each other. We're going to do this or we're not going to do this. We know what he, being Greg Ginn, is capable of doing, and we're not scared. We're not shaking in our shoes, and we're not going to be bullied. We'll just proceed forward. We live our lives, and whatever the outcome is, we're good guys. We've done nothing wrong, so we don't really have anything to worry. We don't really have to worry about anything." And then he said about the threat of a temporary restraining order or an injunction. "We are going to continue forward. We're going to continue forward until somebody that we deal with on a day-to-day basis tells us that we can't do it." So I don't know if there's a whole lot to say about this. Personally, I back Keith Morris, and I hope Flag continues to be a successful project, and I hope Keith Morris keeps being great. But other than that, it just means that, you know, Flag seems resolute to battle back against the Black Flag / Greg Ginn lawsuit.
It seems to me that, I mean, in an ideal world, they would have called the band something else, because the fact that they've called it, you know, Black Flag's name minus the black, and that they have been selling, like, T-shirts with the bars on, it seems to put them on shaky ground, if not legally, then ethically. But yeah,
I don't think that's shaky ground ethically. I think they're 100. I mean, I think that. I mean, I think everybody understands that Flag is Flag and that Black Flag is Black Flag, and they're two different things. But I think Chuck Dukowski and Keith Morris and Dez Kadena and Bill Stevenson are entirely allowed or morally correct in touring as Flag and using that.
Oh yeah, but in those songs. The fact that they've put themselves in this position where if it does end up in front of a jury, it might seem ambiguous to people who aren't, you know, a part of our weird little scene.
Right.
Like, it seems maybe morally questionable is the wrong word. It seems unwise. It's possibly not the best way to have gone forward with it.
John, you would obviously know better than me, and I don't even pretend to know the nuances of trademark law or anything like that. And I don't want to say too much about this because I know personally he's from my hometown, the bass player who's playing in Black Flag, and I have a very good relationship with Stefan. So, but I do want to ask, wouldn't you have to prove that, like, the use of the name Flag and playing these songs with these members was somehow detrimental to any, like, future monetary gains that Black Flag would make from either album sales or touring? Like, wouldn't you have to actually prove that people would see Flag and they'd be like, oh, I'm confused, but I think this is what I want to see? Isn't that kind of like the burden of proof that Greg Ginn would have to obtain?
Sort of. Here's the answer. There's actually several. There's like three main ways to file a trademark infringement suit against somebody. The two main ones follow the same format, and that is when you are trying to claim trademark infringement. That is when you are trying to show that consumers are confused as to who is producing the product. The court goes through an 8-factor test. The burden is on the plaintiff to show that all those 8 factors weighted together is more in the favor of the plaintiff than the defendant.
Okay, so that's what I was saying, right? But then there's
economics is one of those factors. Another.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
Are they selling the same type of product? Another is how similar is the logo. Another is how far apart are they geographically? That kind of thing. So it's an one of the 8 factors.
Right.
So
I gotcha.
So like I said, I think it's going to be messy. I support Keith Morris and Flag. I mean, I didn't want to choose sides. I really didn't. But I mean, what can I say? Keith Morris has always been a friend to Punk News, and he's always granted us interviews when we've asked. And so I support Keith Morris, and I hope he comes out okay in this whole situation.
Would I be right in saying that there's an injunction that he's trying to get an injunction on
Well, the answer is in their complaint they ask for an injunction, but you don't actually get an injunction. There's three kinds of injunctions. There's temporary restraining orders, preliminary injunctions, and permanent injunctions. If you want to get a temporary restraining order or preliminary injunction, which is an injunction before trial, then you have to file a motion. It doesn't appear that you filed a motion. But if they just want a permanent injunction, when the jury makes its decision, the judge can decide whether or not you get a permanent injunction after trial.
Cool.
And moving on, this was quite divisive too, is Andrew Seward, who used to be in Against Me, has got a brand new band called Human Parts, and they just released a new track called The Rumble. Some people loved it, and some people really hated it. I actually thought it was kind of weird and kind of cool, to tell you the truth. Like, it didn't really have a normal structure, and I really didn't know what it was about, but I thought maybe the actual recording sounded kind of bad, like the bad production. But I thought the song was kind of cool, and I thought the video was cool too, where it's got Andrew Seward's like facial hair changing rapidly while he sings.
I honestly have not heard the song or seen the video, so I'll just sit quietly over here.
Cool. I've only listened to it once, but I was into it. You know, it's a bit jarring compared to his work with Against Me, and you know, he's been in that band since it's got to be early 2000s. If not earlier, and you know, it's always going to be jarring when someone starts to move in a different direction musically, but you know, I think it's a lot better than starting another band that sounds, you know, a lot like your old band, because he's not Tom Gable, he's Andrew Seward, and he's going to do his own bit. I also really enjoyed the video, you know, like it's got a sort of transitional theme to it, whereas he's obviously been cutting his hair. Both off the top of his head and his face over the course of the video, and then splicing bits together. The song could probably take a bit more time to grow on me. I can't really make a judgment off one listen, but yeah, you know, I'm positive about it. Dude's moving forward with whatever he wants to do, and that's cool.
Well, that's a good point, because if Andrew Seward had come out with a new band and it sounded even like 50% like Against Me, people would just tear him apart. So
yeah.
I haven't heard it, but if he's doing something that's new and exciting to him and it's something off what we're used to hearing from him, then that's, I mean, that's ultimately a good thing. So
actually, I'll tell you, is I was surprised because I heard he was going to come out with a hip-hop album devoted to vegetables. So,
dude, well, apparently someone told him that, you know, the most powerful woman in the country already thought of that.
Yeah, well, just
Beyonce.
Oh, I thought the Oprah joke was coming, but that's good. It's good stuff.
Well, who is more powerful, Oprah or Beyonce? I got to go with Oprah still, to tell you the truth. Even man, I like Oprah, but
I want
to
see them in a ring with those oversized gloves, you know? Just go at it.
I've never tried to learn any of Oprah's dance moves while drunk at a wedding, so Beyonce. Got a bit.
Speaking of drunk dance moves, we're going to wrap this bad boy on up. Gwar! They've got a brand new album coming out September 17, one of my all-time favorite heavy metal bands, one of my all-time favorite bands. The album is called Battle Maximus, and it follows the death of Corey Smoot / Flatus Maximus, their previous guitar player, who rejuvenated the band in about 2002. The new guitar player is Pustulus Maximus, and he brings a different style to the band. I don't know, did you guys check out this track, Bloodbath? I liked it a lot. I thought it was pretty good.
I haven't actually had a chance.
I didn't know.
Well, I
didn't
have had a chance. I'm lazy.
Well,
but so we don't have a few minutes of silence. I've got a Gwar question that you could probably answer, John, since that's like one of your favorite bands.
Yeah, it is.
So you know who Zach Blair is?
Yeah.
Right. So he used to play guitar in Gwar. What was his name when he was playing with Gwar?
Let's see. I'll tell you real quick. I think he was Flatus Maximus, the guitar player.
Right. So I was thinking like, yeah, he inhibited. He did not inhibit that role. He inhabited that role, like before this guy, or was he just holding that guy's place for a little while?
Here's how it works: is Gwar was really, really good from 1988 through 1992. Their first three albums are all really good. Hello's very good. Scumdog's Universe is fantastic, and America Must Be Destroyed is fantastic. Then they put out about four albums that range from like bad to really bad, just because like they didn't really work too hard on them and they sound cheesy. Then they kind of didn't reboot the band, but like focused again. They cut down on their stage show, cut out a lot of extraneous characters and people. See, Guar used to have like 10 people in the band, but I think they weren't making like hardly any money at all. So they cut a lot of extraneous people out of the band and just kept their three roadies, which they call their slaves, and the five main guys. Zach Blair was the guy they brought in for Violence Has Arrived, which was Guar's first very good album after their string of four kind of crappy albums. But then he left to go join Rise Against. So then they brought in Corey Smoot, who is a phenomenal guitar player, and he really brought Guar back to, I don't want to say popularity, but like their albums, honestly, they made their best albums ever with Corey Smoot, and the fans kind of responded to that, and they actually got more media exposure because they were more focused again. But then Corey Smoot tragically died from a heart attack, I guess about a year and a half ago now. And
so I remember the story.
Now, so they retired the character because like they felt sad that he died instead of getting quit or kicked out, you know?
Right.
And so they brought in this new character, Pustulus Maximus, who also played in Cannibus Corpse and brings a more, I guess, stoner metal style as compared to Corey Smoot's like European thrash style.
Okay, so here's my other question about Guar, because I'm not too familiar with him. But one time, I was at my local record store, and I saw a Guar 7-inch, and it was like on sale for like $1.50 or whatever. So I bought it, and I'm going to tell you what it was. What's that?
Is it Penguin Attack, or it's Guar's Christmas?
Holy shit, that was such a good guess. Do they only have like 2 7-inches ever?
They only have 2 7-inches.
Oh, okay, yeah, it was Penguin Attack. Penguin Attack was okay, but the B-side, I Hate Love Songs, I freaking love that song. Is that, like, considered their bad period?
Yeah, that is considered their bad period.
Man, that song's so good, though.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but it's kind of like a silly song, you know?
compared to another output.
Well, Guar is funny.
It just has more pop sensibilities than I was used to anticipating, I guess, from Guar, and I dug that song.
You're perfectly validated in liking that song. I think a lot of Guar fans don't want the popish songs; they want the more thrash metal songs. You know,
right? Well, fair enough.
I mean, that is one of their experimental pieces, and I actually think that song's pretty good. Fun fact is that's off Carnival of Chaos, and there's actually an extended version of that song on the CD.
Like, extended, like, there's an extra verse and chorus?
It's
or?
Like 3 more minutes. I haven't compared the choruses.
Oh, okay. So, I just didn't know if, like, they went all, like, decline on it, made, like, a 16-minute version or something.
No, they just kind of, like, make it more bluesy at the end and stuff. So, anyways. That's cool. And it just goes to show, listeners, that people have different tastes. And so just because somebody likes a band that you don't like or somebody likes a different period of band, it doesn't mean they're wrong. It just means that they appreciate a band in a different way than you appreciate it, which is perfectly valid. That's what art is all about. Am I right, Paul?
That is so true. So true.
Well, fair enough. And I think we're going to close out the podcast with a song by a band called Cut You Up, who used to hang around with Green Day and Blink 182 and Sum 41, I think, way back in the day. They just put out a new EP out on MVD Records, I think, and it was interesting because it's kind of like indie rock, but it's got some real dark tones to it. This track is called Hunted by Wolves by Cut You Up.
We are worse than wolves, hunted down like animals. 3 days away, taken way too far. Try to impress, stabbing us, looking good, standing straight, looking sharp. Counting down till 2 a.m. but too late, another shot. We'll be right back.
thanks for listening to the Punk News Podcast. Once again, thanks to Paul Penley from Red City Radio. Paul, thanks again.
Hey, thanks for having me, John.
And Andy, as always, it's always a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Cheers, folks. You'll probably hear from me at some point in October, since I'll be in the right time zone to record.
And Paul's new album is coming out, we say, October 15 on Paper and Plastic, Red City Radio. Correct, Paul?
Right. And on CD on Black Numbers.
Fantastic. And as always, we have to thank Sound Guy Nairman. Sound Guy Nairman, can you hear me? This is Virginia Woolf speaking. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Sound Guy Nairman, can you hear me? It's Margaret.
I hear that, Nairman. It's me, Margaret.
Hey. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And as always, the opinions expressed on the Punk News Podcast, especially the opinions expressed by Paul Penley, are the opinions of people expressing them exclusively and do not in any way represent the opinions of punknews.org. As always,
necessarily.
Punk, you wonderful listeners, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
See ya.